you know, this may be heresy in a community as oriented toward tradition as this one seems to be, but and the generally pleasant position to take is that everybody has a piece of the action. You know, the Hasids know something, the Buddhists know something, the Book of Mormon, there's something there. The mushroom was incredibly ungenerous on this point. It said, nobody knows jack shit about what is going on. So it is for you, with your body as laboratory and your mind as worker in that laboratory, to find the way to reflux the alchemical gold. The only experience which counts is your own experience. Everything else is somehow handed down through social structures and political structures. It's irrelevant. If flying saucers were to land on the south lawn of the White House tomorrow, it would not matter to you as much as smoking DMT would if you did that tonight, because that's your experience, your conviction, you see. And I believe that the rebirth of paganism, the rebirth of archaism, the rebirth of psychedelic shamanism is coming at this moment, because we are going to be involved in a historical meltdown, which will be the equivalent of a species-deep shamanic crisis, in which, as a collectivity, we are going to have to make the journey to the well of worlds and recover and cleanse the collective soul of humanity. We have lost touch with our moral compass because we have lost touch with the Gaian mind. And this is not a metaphor. If you take these neurotransmitters, these exopheromones that connect you up with the natural environment, the Gaian intent becomes known. It's an act of feeling. If we could feel what we are doing, we would stop doing it. But we live in a realm of abstraction, excuses, incredible wealth. Incredible levels of pampering and softness lie between us, the upper 5% of the intellectual and material elite on the planet, and the problems. I mean, how many of us have been to Bosnia or Rwanda or Somalia? These things are only images on a dehumanizing screen. If we could feel what we are doing, we would awaken to the mystery of each other and to the mystery of the historical process of recovering what was lost. We don't need this material civilization. We don't need 5 billion people on this planet. We have to think very, very radically about how we are going to change ourselves, or we're not going to make the cut. And orthodoxy is utterly and completely bankrupt. All it can do is suppress. They suppress, they suppress, they suppress. But there's only one argument that will forgive suppression: deliverance. And they can't give us deliverance. All they can give us is the Menendez trial, OJ, Baby M, the skaters, Klaus von Bülow. Horseshit, horseshit, horseshit. We are locked inside a nightmare of contaminated and toxic imagery that is designed to disempower you and make it impossible for you to think straight. And the way out is straight back to the reality of the vegetable gnosis. It is there. It has always been there. The societies that never broke the connection live in dynamic and loving balance with each other and the planet today, were it not for the input of our disruptive social and economic systems. So I talk to all kinds of people who I see as part of my community, but it stretches from virtual reality to the radical gay movement, to the house movement, to the pagan movement, to the younger molecular pharmacologists, to the radical art historians and psychotherapists. All of these communities are fragmented and suspicious of each other, and this is precisely what orthodoxy enjoys. If all of these countercultural impulses could make common cause, we would probably discover that we're 65 to 70% of the population. And so what is needed is a spirit of boundary dissolution between individuals, between classes, sexual orientations, rich and poor, man and woman, intellectual and feeling-toned types. If this can happen, then we will make a new world. And if this doesn't happen, nature is fairly pitiless and has a place for us in the shale of this planet where so many have preceded us. Well, I think that's the basic rave. It raises a lot of issues. If somebody's burning to ask a question, yes, burning to ask. Well, I think that it's very hard to find pristine, quote, pseudo-paleolithic or pseudo-neolithic culture. Even the Amazon, where I've spent a lot of time, tribes that were nomadic at the time of contact are now agriculturalists, simply because missionary medicine has swollen Aboriginal populations to the point where they can't be nomads as they used to be. So you're right, there are some psychedelic using cultures that are pretty unappealing, although actually I can only think of one that I find politically very unappealing, and I don't want to knock them because I haven't lived with them, so I may be misled. But I think that it's not simply to take psychedelics, but it's also to decondition oneself to the notion of ego and all the concepts which constellate around that, such as place, property, ownership, and stability. You see, the idea that we have inherited from Western religion and science is the idea that things should be stable. This is a very male-dominant notion, the wish for stability, eternity, when in fact the message life hands you over and over again is nothing lasts. Nothing lasts. Not what you love, not what you hate, not your enemies, your friends, not even your dear, dear self. Nothing lasts. And the ego goes mad in the presence of that truth. It can't swallow it. And so we have anxiety of death, need to dominate people, need to possess property, terror of illness, resentment of fate, because we are not in the flow. And I think what these psychedelics do is they put you very much in the here and now. And it's nothing more than that. I mean, obviously, I'm an egghead and an abstract thinker, and I hope to make my reputation in mathematics. But feeling is the primary validator of existence. I mean, if you don't know that, you've got to go back to square one. And these things empower feeling. They are catalysts for the imagination. I mean, you may not like what psychedelics do to you. They may terrify you. But if it terrifies you, then surely it must have catalyzed your imagination, or you wouldn't have known that terror. So catalysis of the imagination in a fairly loving and yet ruthless way is what the psychedelics deliver. Anybody who calls this escapism is sitting on their thumb. I mean, they don't know what they're talking about. Reality is for people who can't handle this stuff. I do want to say one thing. It almost slipped my mind, and for those of you who have your hands up, I apologize, but I think this needs to be said, and I don't know how many of you know it, but this comes under the this is a news flash, folks. We interrupt this program to bring you a special announcement. A new psychoactive substance has been discovered. A very powerful psychoactive substance. The most powerful since the discovery of LSD. A substance so powerful that 300 micrograms is the dose. That means 1 gram will dose 7,000 people. This compound comes from a plant. The plant is, and I hope you're paying attention, the plant is legal. The compound is legal. You can possess it. You can manufacture it. You can transport it across borders. You can give it away, you can sell it, and you can do it on stage. And it comes from a plant. And the plant is also available, and I want to tell you about this because okay. No shoving. All right, not to keep you in suspense any longer. The plant is Salvia divinorum. Salvia divinorum, which some of you who are real mavens of this stuff know it. It's been in the books for 30 years. The problem was nobody knew how to get off. And so it was always carried in these lists as suspect hallucinogen. The thing is, any scientist confronted with a plant where somebody says it's a hallucinogen will test to see if it's an alkaloid. All hallucinogens, almost all, are alkaloids. So salvia divinorum, negative for alkaloids. Doesn't matter. It has a new unknown compound in it, now known, salvorine alpha. And the interesting thing about salvorine alpha is we have in this country what's called a structural near relatives or cogener law, which says if a compound is a structural near relative isomer, enantiomer, or stereoisomer of an illegal compound, then it too can be made illegal. Salvia divinorum doesn't fit this description. That means that in order to make this stuff illegal, the government will have to present medical data showing there is something wrong with it. And at this stage, nobody on Earth knows the real pharmacological parameters of this compound. So here's the deal. You can grow this plant in a window box, in your apartment, in your backyard. It looks like Joe Plant. There is nothing particularly distinguishing about this plant. And if you have 3 or 4 cuttings, in 6 or 7 months, you will have more than you know what to do with. And then I'll just describe how I do it. I'm slightly chicken shit to do the pure compound, which, by the way, you do 300 micrograms. Understand that what that looks like is a grain of salt. A small grain of salt is a human effective dose. It comes on so fast that you have no impression of it coming on at all. You do it, and then after a while, you notice that for a long time you have been staring at something incomprehensible. Well, here's how I recommend that you do it while we get the chemical thing sorted out, because the chemical it could be dangerous. It would be very easy to overdose by a factor of 10, 20, 30, and you would still just be doing a smidgen. So I say, let's honor the plants. Let's not hand the government a bunch of casualties that it can cluck over and put on national TV, you know, the bibble, bibble, bibble show. Let's use the plant. And the way you do it is you grow up a batch of this stuff and get between 15 and 20 leaves. Remove the mid-vein with your fingernail just to lower the mass. Fold it all into a little pile. Put it in your mouth. And 20 leaves is a whopping mouthful. So basically, as much as you can get in your mouth, put it in your mouth, lie down in silent darkness, and squeeze this stuff with your jaws. Tastes like it's horrible. It's not as bad as ayahuasca, but it's horrible.